cue the fancy intro music. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and this is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom helps you to find success on your own terms and build a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love. So whether you watch the web series, the live Q&A, or are just joining us through the podcast, welcome. I'm excited you're here. In our last episode, we talked about how to know if an event is worth attending or skipping. Today, I'm sharing my take on live events from the other side of the coin. For more than 10 years now, I've hosted live events of all shapes and sizes, from simple teleclasses every month, online concerts and client appreciation events, to live concerts and multi-day virtual events like the Direct Sales Super Summit or my annual Creative Freedom Live event that's coming up in Nashville this October. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, creativefreedomlive.com. Through the years, I've made a lot of mistakes, including one event that tanked so hard, I almost had to sell my car to fix the problem. I've also had some financial wins along the way, like my first five-figure month during my first virtual summit. Events done well are a win for you and the attendees. Done poorly, well, let's just say no one wants to be a part of a bad event. So here are my best tips for helping you have an event that exceeds your expectations and keeps your attendees smiling all the way home. Number one, know your goals. I'm always talking about defining success on your own terms. So what will success look like for you? Much like our last episode, it pays quite literally to know what your goals are for an event. Do you want to grow your email list or brand recognition? Virtual events are a great way to do that. Trying to generate income and elevate your brand in the marketplace? In-person events carry a higher perceived value, so it's easier to charge more. Do you want to bring people together? Again, an in-person event is going to create deeper, stronger connections among your attendees than most virtual events. Knowing your goals helps you determine not only the audience you're likely to attract, but also how you can deliver the content as well as the price point for attendees. As I said, an in-person event usually carries a bit more psychological value in your client's mind, but then they also have to consider travel costs. When I hosted my first live event, I included the cost of meals and rooms in the ticket. We barely broke even on that event, but the attendees got a three-day intensive with no hidden costs. So I wasn't just selling an event, I was selling peace of mind. Sometimes you'll have multiple goals for an event, so select which one is the primary. If you're hosting a virtual event and your goal is to increase your mailing list, you'll probably want to make it free to attend to encourage as many people to sign up as possible. Include incentives to share the event with friends and colleagues. In short, do everything you can to encourage people to make your event viral. Then, if your secondary goal is to generate revenue from the same event, make the revenue drivers a secondary feature of the event. When I first launched my first virtual event, the Direct Sales Super Summit, I did exactly that. I partnered with speakers who committed to sharing the event with their audience and offered a referral contest for leaders who encouraged their teams to register as well. The winner got a free session for their team, and I got more subscribers to the event. But there's a difference between a subscriber and a qualified lead. A qualified lead is willing and able to make an investment with you if your offer is a good fit for them. While thousands of people signed up for my virtual event, not everyone was a qualified lead. Since my secondary goal was to generate revenue for both myself and my speakers, I gave each presenter an opportunity to sell during their session and let them keep the proceeds. I didn't take a cut of their sales income, though many summit hosts do. Instead, I sold the upgrade package to the audios. It really depends on the size of your existing audience. In my experience, if you're just getting started or don't have a healthy existing list of your own, you're really relying on your speakers to be the draw and to bring the audience. So it seems a bit heavy-handed to then take 50% of everything they sell during your event. You're basically playing Moneyball. Hey, I'll give you some quote-unquote exposure and split the proceeds with you, even though you're the one doing almost all the work. On the other hand, if you're taking more of the risk by providing a ready-made audience, and they're a relative unknown, then it makes sense to ask them to make a bigger investment in what you're doing because of the risk you're shouldering to have them there. Like, if Oprah called me and said, hey, I want you to be a part of my virtual event and I'll take half of everything you sell, I'd be all, where do I sign? Because I know that I convert well in front of an audience, and she's got a much bigger audience than I do. Likewise, if Oprah agreed to be at my event, I certainly wouldn't take a portion of her sales if she agreed to help promote the event. And I might even offer her an appearance fee because she'd be a tremendous draw in many circles. And as an aside, that's part of why speaker fees can reach well past 5 to 7 figures. If they can bring an audience, there's value in that for you, the event host. So it makes sense to pay for that value. Okay, so know your goals and prioritize them. That's the first step. What are you trying to accomplish with this event? What's in it for you and what's in it for the attendee? For Creative Freedom Live, I wanted to have an intimate event where a handful of creatives could get together, start building solid relationships with one another, and have the makings of a support network as they step into the CEO role of their company. I wanted that for myself as much as I wanted it for my attendees. Also, because I'm a results-oriented person, I wanted them to be able to take action right at the workshop and have something done before they left, something that would continue to benefit them long after they got home from the event. That's why the focus is on building a growth plan. By the end of the event, you know exactly what you need to do over the next 12 to 15 months to achieve the goals that you decide are most important for you, both personally and professionally. You also learn how to course correct if and when things go off the rails. Like Dave Ramsey said, it's not a question of if an emergency will happen, but a question of when. So it makes sense to be prepared. Creative Freedom Live does all that, wrapped in a very intimate and intensive package. I rent a house, and we all live like a family for a few days, so we really get to know each other. We also uncover some of those hidden stories and disempowering beliefs and habits that can slow you down. Things that are easy to hide at a big 3-day conference where you're just a nameless face in the crowd. By the time you leave Creative Freedom Live, everybody knows everybody. And that was my primary goal. I wanted to bring folks together and give them friends and colleagues who understood them and saw them for the courageous, creative entrepreneur that they are and are becoming. Partly because I needed that for myself too. I've always been my own guinea pig, so to speak, and I knew that an event like this could really be a rising tide for anyone who attended. My secondary goal was to have a platform to deliver the knowledge that I have about the creative freedom spectrum and the six-figure creative entrepreneur. I wanted a way to teach people up close and in person where I can see the light bulbs go on. This material that I've been researching and living for years. All the material in the book, and then some, we go through it in a practical, hands-on way. I wanted people to actually do the work so I could have testimonials and so that they would have real results. Again, I'm a results-oriented chick, so that's important to me. My third goal was income. Now, that sounds weird, doesn't it? A live event where making money isn't the primary goal? Yeah, I know a few people have told me that. As long as the event isn't losing money and is compensating me for my time to be there, I'm a happy camper. That's why the event is currently limited to no more than 10 people. Much more than that, and we have to look at a much bigger venue with food and beverage costs and other overhead that I'm not ready to commit to yet. Now, if my goals change in the future, Creative Freedom Live might change too. But for now, those are my goals in that priority order, and I'm building the event that way. Number 2, know your audience. Just because you want to create a 3-day live event in Flint, Michigan, does not mean your audience wants to attend. That's why after you get clear on your goals, you need to get clear on your audience. Because you may find, like I did, that your preferred delivery method doesn't work for your audience. I held my first live event in the Flint area, and since I didn't lose money, I thought I'd try again. Except this time, I got it all wrong. My first event was a business event. I was the only speaker And I had spent years building an audience of direct sales professionals that made it easier to sell tickets. My second event in the Flint area, or should I say my almost live event in the Flint area, was a fiasco. I had recently shifted my audience from direct sellers to mom entrepreneurs. I had this great idea to do a 3-day event featuring some pretty incredible mom entrepreneurs as speakers, like Lisa Welchel, who played Blair Warner on The Facts of Life. I signed contracts, I booked venues, I got sponsors, had a support team, and was super excited about this event. We marketed like crazy and sold a grand total of one ticket to this event. One ticket. I wish I was joking. I had to call my speakers and tell them we were canceling the event. And one speaker's marketing team, bless her heart, they were tough on me. They basically told me I still needed to pay the speaking fees since she had already arranged travel and would have to rearrange her schedule again since she wasn't local. I had never stayed awake all night worrying before that night. You know when marketing coaches tell you to find out what keeps your prospects awake in bed at 2 a.m.? Yeah, that was me. I was seriously considering selling my car to be able to pay her fee and get her off my back. It was a mess, a horrible mess. I managed to salvage part of the event and make it a virtual event, but it never did measure up to my lofty expectations, mostly because I screwed up on these first two points. I didn't have a clear goal. In my mind, I'm sure I thought I had a clear goal, but I didn't. It was too vague. I wanted to make a ton of money helping mompreneurs and share the stage with some pretty awesome celebrity speakers. I reasoned with myself that my first event went okay, so my second event would be even better, and I didn't do my due diligence. Otherwise, I think it would have become clear pretty quickly that mompreneurs struggle with the idea of taking 3 days away from their kids. That's why they're mompreneurs. And Flint, Michigan, as lovely as it is in many respects, is not an international tourist destination. Add to that, the goal I had of helping a local church raise money for a new roof, and this thing was all over the map in terms of goals. And I certainly wasn't listening to my audience. What makes this more comical is that I was my core audience at the time. I was a mompreneur with a toddler at home, and I specifically designed the event so that I could be home in the evenings with my kids. Why didn't I think that maybe, just maybe, other mompreneurs would want to be home with their little ones too? If I'd been listening to my audience, I could have probably done a lot better with a virtual event. In fact, once we scrapped the live event idea, that's exactly what we did. I salvaged what I could from the live event concept and shifted gears. We created a virtual online event for mompreneurs on the same weekend as the originally planned event so that we didn't lose the benefit of all the marketing that we had already been doing. The new event was free and designed to let participants connect from the comfort of their home. The response was better, even if the income wasn't there. It probably would have been a lot better had I invested in marketing it as a virtual event from the beginning. But sometimes we learn the hard way. The better you know your audience, the easier it is to create an event that works the way they need it to. Author and speaker Scott Stratton once told the story of a colleague who was distributing music on what appeared to him to be an outdated format. Digital was where it's at, and this guy was analog all the way. But the guy told Scott something that's never left me since that horrible experience I had. It's not my job to tell them how to consume it. It's only my job to make sure that they do. That's what he said. So if your audience is still stuck in the 70s using 8-track tapes, then you put your content out on 8-track tapes. If your audience can't, won't, or doesn't want to attend a 3-day event, then don't do a 3-day event. Keep listening to their needs. What are they saying they want? How can you deliver on that in a way that also works for you? Don't just take the word of a single voice to be representative of your entire audience. I see that happen a lot too. I've done it myself. You get feedback from one person and you make the assumption that because only one person gave you feedback, that it represents what the majority of your audience is thinking. That's a dangerous assumption. Instead, If you don't get a reasonable sample size, be patient. Keep waiting and listening while you wait. Ask better questions, more engaging questions that get your audience to respond. Don't just make an assumption about what they want or how they'll consume your offer. Now, that said, sometimes you've got something innovative that requires that you deliver your offer in a format they might not be accustomed to, something your audience hasn't seen before. That's great. In that case, you'll need to educate your audience about why they might want to participate. Take Jeep, for example. Most new Jeep buyers come to a dealership, do a test drive, and make a buying decision. That's the quote-unquote normal way that most of us are familiar with. But Jeep did something different. Now, they had been doing Jeep jamborees for decades for hardcore Jeep enthusiasts that were part of the Jeep community. But in order to launch their all-new 2011 Jeep Cherokee and reach a larger buying audience, they decided to do something more than a typical test drive, but not quite like the Jamboree, which was designed for people who already owned Jeeps. They called it Jeep Rocks and Road. It was designed as an experiential event. According to George P. Johnson, the marketing company that developed the concept, quote, "The tour was a 16-city test drive and brand experience event designed to drive customer engagement, brand loyalty, and new vehicle sales from both existing owners and new buyers," end quote. Those are some pretty clear goals. Notice how sales wasn't the primary driver. They wanted people to get in a Jeep, to experience a Jeep, and really see what a Jeep could do. They wanted to convert people thinking about buying a Jeep into Jeep enthusiasts, whether or not they actually ended up buying a Jeep. They wanted people talking about Jeep, which they knew would lead to more people getting curious about Jeep and ultimately buying a Jeep. The marketing firm's website explains it thus, quote, "In a world of pavement-based test drives and mild semi-off-road courses, this tour brought the dramatic capabilities of the Jeep brand to life on extreme courses that tested the limits of the vehicle like no other marketing event of its kind," end quote. This was a brand new way to get their core audience to experience the brand and a totally unfamiliar way for people new to the brand to take a test drive. It was a new idea for anyone wanting to take a test drive. Hop in a brand new Jeep and drive it over logs and rocky terrain. Put the four-wheel drive to the test and see what this baby's really capable of. Get off the highway and the regular roads and make a day out of test driving the all-new Jeep. Now, sure, some of the attendees were already Jeep owners who just can't get enough of Jeep and wanted to have another brand experience to deepen their connection to the community. But they were also brand evangelists, bringing their friends to try this extreme joyride experience in a brand new Jeep. Did some of those Jeep owners buy another Jeep? Sure. But most of them didn't. Jeep enthusiasts are known for tricking out their rides, and they're partial to their babies. But those folks they brought along with them, and the buzz Jeep created in the community about this experience, brought new buyers to the table, and it worked. Jeep brand sales were up in those target markets. They listened to their audience, they brought something entirely new, and trusted their gut based on a core audience that already told them that this kind of event would be doable. They also marketed well in advance, which we'll talk about in a minute. Number three, start small, smaller than you anticipate. I don't recommend jumping into a live event until you've got an audience that's engaged enough and ready enough to do something on that scale. Now, that scale is relative. My first live event, I was hoping for 20 people. I got 5. My last live event, I wanted 5 and got 3. For Creative Freedom Live this year, I'm shooting for 10 and I've already got 5 with a couple months to go. That's how momentum works. The first time you do something, the results are never as good as the next time you do it because you've got momentum on your side. The 3 people that came last year are all planning to return this year, and I've expanded my network since last year, and some of those folks have already said yes, and a few more are using last week's episode to decide for themselves if it's an investment that they're ready for this year or if they're going to wait till next year. But even if only 5 people attend this year, that's more than last year. And fewer than there'll be next year, because that's how momentum works. Things start to pick up speed. When I'm designing an event, whether it's a teleclass or something like Creative Freedom Live, I build it based on what I call the law of three. If only three people sign up, how could I craft it so that it's a win for everyone? If I can't make the event work with three people, I don't do it, or I keep tweaking it until I can. When I worked with direct sellers, we talked a lot about hostess coaching and the importance of over-inviting to ensure strong attendance at your parties and events. I regularly encouraged hosts to invite 40 people because invariably half the people you invite won't be able to make it right off the bat. And that leaves about 20 people. Of those, something will come up for about half of them. Flat tire, they'll forget, something else will come up, kids get sick, whatever. That leaves you with about 8 to 10 people at your party. The perfect number for an in-home party. And if you end up with more people in attendance, so much the better. So if you want 10 people at your event, you need to invite 40 to 50 people. And if you're inviting people online, the numbers are even higher because the conversion rates are substantially lower. An email will typically get a 3 to 5% click-through rate. That means if 100 people open the email, 3 to 5 of them will click through to your website to learn more about the event. You need 40 people to get that invitation. That means having about 800 people read that email so that about 40 people will click through. 800 people invited via email in order to get about 10 people to say yes to your event. And if you're using Facebook ads or something like that, that's even colder, those numbers go even higher. You simply need to reach more people before you'll hit that magic number. And that's why I say start small. Now, another way to get better results, better conversions, is to invite people personally. That's number four, invite personally when it makes sense. If I think someone's a good fit for Creative Freedom Live and I know them, I'll sometimes reach out and give them a personal invitation. The know, like, and trust factor is higher with people who already know you, people you already have a relationship with. Now, don't go inviting everyone with a pulse. Anyone who can fog up a mirror. Stay focused on your goals. Who do you really want at that event? Who do you think would get amazing results or really get a lot out of being there? Invite them personally and take their feedback to heart. After all, you want them there, so their opinion, their input matters. But again, don't take the voice of one lone person as gospel. Listen to your entire audience and trust your instincts on what to tweak and what to keep. Number five. Start marketing as early as possible. Have you noticed that movie trailers are now running as much as a year before opening day? There's a whole marketing machine for major motion pictures here in the States, and you'll start seeing trailers and teasers for a new movie in the Marvel Universe about a year before it drops. About 6 months before opening day, you start seeing multiple full-length trailers going live to keep momentum growing for the event. The sooner you start marketing, the easier it will be to reach the people you need to reach in order to fill your event. The Jeep event I mentioned earlier had dealerships promoting the event as much as 3 to 4 months in advance. One dealership in Houston was posting on their blog at the beginning of August about the Jeep event being held at the end of October in Dallas-Fort Worth, about 4 hours away. That's how serious Jeep was about getting people to the event. Jeep provided all the dealerships in the area with marketing copy primed for their right audience. They didn't leave anything to chance and just hope that the dealerships would make a mention of it. They controlled the narrative, positioned the event, and leaned on their partners to do the local promoting, which brings me to number six. Ask for help. Whether you've got a support team or marketing affiliates outside of your business, you're delegating tasks to your team or event planner, or you're leveraging technology to do some of the heavy lifting, don't expect that you can pull off an event all by yourself. Even my monthly teleclasses for A Club aren't completely a solo work. I draft a script, but my designer built the document template so that the script looks nice and reads well. I use technology in the form of a conference line that allows me to record the audio and manage the participants. I can run a Q&A session and field questions without having to unmute everybody. The call stays clean, people get heard, and their questions get answered. Now, I don't market those nearly as heavily as an event like Creative Freedom Live because they happen 8 times a year and they're free to listen live. Only members of A Club get the recordings, so it's a recurring list building tool for me. I could probably do a lot more with it if I was willing to do more heavy marketing and promotion, but I have other priorities right now, like this live event. So affiliate partners can help you reach more people. If you've invited other speakers to be part of your event, you've got a built-in list of folks you can invite to help spread the word about the event. Affiliate marketing is a topic for an entire podcast episode all by itself, so I won't try to unpack that can of worms today. What I will say is that the more people you have helping you to spread the word, the more likely you are to reach your goals. Number 7, honor your commitments or just don't make them. This one is really about being ethical in the marketplace. If you promise something, do your best to deliver on that promise. We all know that things happen, and sometimes a guest can't make their scheduled appearance or technology doesn't cooperate. I'm not talking about that. I mean, teach what you said you're going to teach. Don't just teach the why and the what, teach the how. That's what people are coming to you for more times than not. There's a prevailing marketing ploy, especially in the online world, that says, teach them the what and the why, but save the how for your upsell. Whether you're doing a free webinar or a 3-day intensive, if people are signing up for how to make $1 million in a month, then you better teach them how to do it. Don't just tell them the generic steps. Give them some concrete action steps beyond signing up for your next big ticket thing. That smacks of a bait and switch. And while you technically taught them something, you didn't deliver on your core promise for the event. That's the kind of stuff that really cheeses off your audience. And if you don't care, if you're just in this game to sell as much schlock as you can and get out of Dodge, then you don't need to listen to Creative Freedom. You need a conscience. People are turning to you and putting their trust in you. They're investing in themselves through you, and they want a positive return on that investment. You wouldn't be too happy if the tables were turned, so don't do it to your guests. When I was in real estate, our trainer told us to treat every buyer like they were our sister and every seller like they were our grandmother. The line of thinking was that we'd defend and protect our baby sister and make sure she was getting a solid deal on a safe house, and we'd make sure our grandma didn't just take the first offer on the table and end up with far less than market value for their home. So if people are turning to you, treat them right. That doesn't mean you have to be a doormat. I did an episode about how to say no with class. You don't have to be a doormat. You do need to do your best to keep your promises. We are counting on you. Number 8, lastly, when it comes to testimonials, ask early and often. Whether you're asking your speakers for testimonials about what it's like to work with you, or attendees what the event experience was like, don't wait. Start asking as soon as practical and follow up with folks who've offered but haven't provided one yet. Testimonials are third-party trust and credibility builders for your event. Nothing sells a ticket quite like having someone else saying, "Oh my gosh, you need to go. This thing is so amazing. It changed my life." When you say it, it comes across as arrogant marketing. When someone else says it, there's an entirely different level of trust. Plus, your audience wants to hear from people who they think are a lot like them, and that's not you. No matter how much you've traveled in their shoes on your journey, you've already solved their issue, so they see you as removed from them in some way. Show your potential attendees that people just like them are getting a lot out of your event, and you'll have a much better shot at seeing them register. That's it. 8 key lessons that I've learned about hosting live events over the last 10 years. Some of them I've learned the hard way, but they've definitely made a difference in how I do things now. So your task for this week, if you are considering hosting your own event, is to get clear on your goals. What do you want your next event to do for you? What does your audience want? And how do they want to consume what you have to offer? If you're not sure, ask. That concludes this episode of the Creative Freedom Podcast. The transcript is live inside the Rising Tide member area. Membership is free. And when you register for our updates on the website, you will also get access to the member dashboard where all the bonus content lives. One login to rule them all. Just click on the Rising Tide link on the website for registration details. For you visual types, our next video drops in a couple of days, and you can join me for a live Q&A on my Facebook page later this week. If you liked this episode, you can help us make a bigger impact in the world when you subscribe, when you leave a review, testimonials are important, and share us around with your friends and colleagues. Be the help that they need to define and achieve success on their own terms. Next week, we're going to talk about how to get clarity on the kind of help you really need to get momentum in your creative business. I hope you'll join us for that next time. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.